Next case on the court's calendar this morning is Thompson versus VIP Floral Incorporated. I'd like to thank the attorneys for being here early since we wrapped up our last hearing sooner than expected. We're ready for argument from appellant's counsel. Would you please approach the podium? If you need to raise or lower it to suit your height, introduce yourself for the record and begin your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Vince Moccio and I represent the appellant. I'd like to start by addressing the order that was issued by the court in the last couple of days. The issue here is we brought a motion to add a party that was denied. The party never became a party in the case, was never served with a complaint. The case that is cited, the 1945 case, Hansing versus McGrarty, deals with a party, and it all the language in all of the cases citing it, including a couple of cases that I found citing it recently. Godey versus AstraZeneca, which is 2023 Westlaw 3938999. And Kallenbach versus Fabrication Station, which is 2023 Westlaw 2818545, all deal with parties. You cannot, as far as I know, and I've looked, and I find no case where it's happened, serve a notice of appeal on an entity that was never brought into the action below. There is no way to do it. I've found no case in Minnesota, and in a relatively quick review, have found no case in any other state where you bring a party in for the first time on appeal. So I think it's clear that the cases are talking about a party to the case, and if you look at the facts of all of those cases, it is a party, which for various reasons, because of workers' comp issues, et cetera, different ways things get to the Court of Appeals, they never became involved in the appeal, but they were parties in the case. So I think the short answer is absolutely this court can consider the appeal of the failure to amend the complaint. And of course,
if we conclude, however, that the district court was correct in that this hazard was open and obvious, and there's no genuine issue of material fact as to whether the hazard was open and obvious, then the amendment to the complaint would be futile, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So you don't even have to reach the issue. And of course, the way that it would work in the normal course of events is if this court were to reverse and it goes back and were to reverse on the failure to allow the amendment, then I would amend, I would serve Heartland, and they'd come in and they could bring a Rule 12, they could bring a summary judgment. Their rights would be fully protected to get all the judicial relief, including eventually possibly coming back to this court. I don't like the way you phrase that question, but it's absolutely true.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, that's the question, right?
That's the question.
Is there any fact in the record that would undermine the conclusion that this hazard was not open and obvious? Because when I read, and because everybody has the same last name here, when I read Jack's testimony, he says, as soon as I looked down at the ground, I saw this thing was 1 to 2 feet wide. It was open and obvious to me, and he's the only one who saw it, because when I read Anna's testimony, she says, I don't remember, I wasn't paying attention, I just don't remember what it looked like.
Okay.
So what do we do with that?
Here's what you do with it, Your Honor, and obviously the Hornbook law that we all know is that the facts have to be done and inferences have to be taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. Our theory of the case, and it's my contention that we should get to present our theory of the case to the jury, is that when Ms. Thompson looks out the window, she testifies, I didn't see anything that was slippery. She gets out, she goes in, she comes back, she falls down. After she falls down, Ms. Schwiegert, the Heartland employee, comes out and says there was a dusting of snow on the ground.
On the sidewalk.
She doesn't
say there was a dusting of snow in the parking lot.
She does, actually.
Where does she say that?
That's the big bone of contention here. Okay. On pages, and I can cite a couple of things as well, but let's just go to page 15, line 13 of her deposition. The question, so you cleared a path between where the front of the car had been and the wrought iron gate, correct? The wrought iron fence. Now, if you look at the picture, which is index 30, page 11, there's a picture. Maybe I should have blown this up. I thought about it last night. The car is parked in the parking lot. She cleared a path between where the parked car was and the wrought iron gate. That's the parking lot, okay? It's down from the cement slab in the parking lot. It goes on. Cleared a path between the wrought and the wrought iron fence. Yes. Okay, how much snow was there? I don't recall a lot of snow. I feel that there was a dusting of snow. She's putting a dusting of snow in the parking lot at the very spot where the appellant fell. Okay, was there also ice there in that area? And then she says she doesn't recall ice in that area, but there's some question as to whether the picture was correctly marked as to where the car was parked. The evidence, when taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and maybe even objectively, is that she saw a dusting of snow there. Our theory is when Ms. Thompson fell, she disturbed the dusting of snow and revealed the ice.
So then what do we make of Jack's testimony on page 52 of his deposition when he says, when he's asked to describe the ice, what did it look like? Did it look like fresh ice? Yes, some snow on the sides, a little bit of snow on the sides, like just what they couldn't get between the rocks and stuff. So now he's saying how much snow is there? And there's no testimony, no evidence in the record that whatever snow that may have been there would have obscured this ice patch. Do we get to this point where it's not open and obvious?
Taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, that snow was disturbed when she fell on that ice. But
even if the snow was disturbed, I still am not seeing the fact that, or a inference from the facts that are in the record, that whatever snow was there could have obscured this hazard, such that somebody didn't see it or it wasn't open and obvious to somebody who was there.
Because,
can you help me with that?
Yes,
part?
Because when Ms. Thompson testifies, I looked out the window, I didn't see anything that was slippery. The conclusion from that is that the snow was obscuring it. And look, we all live in Minnesota, and we all live in Minnesota in the wintertime. And when there's a dusting of snow, when it's just snowed a little bit after last night's snow, you know that there's patches of ice under that snow, right? And sometimes when you go out and maybe you use a broom because it's just a dusting, you sweep your sidewalk and you reveal patches of ice from melt and thaw, freeze, or whatever from the day or two before. This is a common situation. Well within the knowledge of jurors in Maury County, Minnesota. And we should be able to present that theory. You might not like that theory. The jury may hate that theory, and I lose, and that's fine. But it's not for the judge, and with respect, your honors, to determine whether or not that's a viable theory or not. You only have to determine whether or not it's reasonable, given the inferences. And I believe that it's eminently reasonable, given the inferences. Ms. Thompson didn't see it. The only people who testified they saw it after she fell, because the dusting of snow, just like I do with a broom in the morning, after a dusting of snow overnight, her fall revealed that ice patch. That's our case. If you don't believe that that's an inference, then I lose. But I submit that it's not proper, and it steals Mrs. Thompson of her opportunity to present that theory to the jury, because it's not unreasonable. And it is within the inferences and the testimony taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, which is the law that needs to be followed. Otherwise, judges become juries. And that's what happened here. This judge, and I don't want to repeat any of the comments from the previous argument, but this judge put herself in as the jury. That's improper. Let me turn quickly. We don't need to discuss the whole... I'll stand on the briefs with regard to the issue of whether or not the defendant is relieved of any duties, because where it's open and obvious, they may still have a duty to warn, which doesn't really apply, because it comes down again to open and obvious. Every, as Your Honor mentioned, every issue, all three issues, come down to whether or not it's open and obvious. So turning quickly to the last issue, which is the amendment. Obviously, if the judge, if the court finds that it's open and obvious, then that's moot. But if, as I believe this court should, find that it's not open and obvious, then there's the question of whether or not the amendment was going to be futile. And this court gets to look at that as to whether or not a proper legal ruling was made below. Case law is cited in the brief that gives this court that standard. Here, the testimony, which was a little bit shocking to me because we got a lease that said that the landowner, VIP, was solely responsible for clearing ice and snow. Then we take the I take the deposition of Ms. Schwiegert, who was working that morning at Hartford, and she says, oh, yeah, we have a shovel and we have ice and ice melt, and we go out and do it. I think it's clear that they assumed a duty. The district court judge did not believe that she could find that there was a duty assumed when the only efforts to go out and clear the ice were after the fall. But just because the only evidence is that someone went out and did something after a fall doesn't mean that they weren't in a position and had not assumed a duty. They had the means to do it, and she testified that she used those means, that ice melt and that shovel, to keep the area around the door. Now, again, you get into questions of how far does that extend? Her testimony was that on this day she went out into the parking lot. These raise all kinds of questions for the jury to determine as to whether or not Heartland had, they raise questions as to whether or not they had breached that duty. But I think it's clear that they had assumed that duty, and that's the legal issue here that has to be reversed. They had assumed the duty, and there was no argument made by the respondent with regard to any other means or any other grounds for denying the motion other than it was futile. If there was an assumed duty here because they kept the shovel and the ice melt in the store to clear this area of the parking lot, et cetera, then the duty was assumed, and as a matter of law, the district court committed error. So for those reasons, I believe the district court was wrong on both grounds, and this court should reverse. But certainly, even if you affirm the denial to amend the complaint, you must reverse the summary judgment as to VIP and allow Ms. Thompson to have her day in court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for VIP Floral. Would you introduce yourself for the record before beginning your argument?
Yes. Members of the court, thank you. I'm looking for that, the button.
The button?
Yes, thank you, members of the court. Robert Kuderer here on behalf of the respondent, VIP Floral, Inc. We're here to respectfully request that the trial court, the Maury County District Court, be summarily affirmed in all respects. The issue squarely before the court is whether the trial court properly granted summary judgment based on the open and obvious doctrine, when the undisputed record, as Judge Frisch, you pointed out, we would submit, the undisputed record is that the ice patch in question was open, it was obvious, it was cleanly, it was not concealed or camouflaged in any way.
Well, that's what Mr. Mochio is arguing as a fair inference from the record, that there is some testimony in the record that there was a dusting of snow, that perhaps there's an inference that can be made from the shop owner's testimony that the dusting of snow extended into the parking lot, and that When she looked out, when she got to the parking lot, when the plaintiff got there, she didn't see any hazards, and so therefore the jury could conclude from cobbling those things together that there was something that might have obscured the open and obvious nature of the hazard.
Yes.
How do you address that, counsel?
We would respectfully submit that that's not an inference. An inference, and a reasonable inference at that, it was what this case law requires. It be not a metaphysical doubt, not speculation, not possible, but an inference is a conclusion reached based on evidence and reasoning. And here, there is a complete lack of any evidence whatsoever that, A, that there was any snow concealing this ice patch on which she fell, and further would be the leap of faith then that the appellant fell in such a way so as to perfectly and cleanly remove all evidence and vestiges of any snow such that the ice patch would now appear to be open, obvious, not concealed in any way to someone viewing it just minutes or seconds later. That's not a reasonable inference. A reasonable inference is, to quote the jury instruction, dog prints, footprints in the snow, dog walked through the snow. But you've got the dog prints in the snow on which to base that reasonable inference. Here, this is a bunch of this might have happened, this could have happened, and it's stacked one on top of another. The law in Minnesota is that the test for open and obviousness is not whether the person in fact saw the hazard, but whether it was in fact visible on a brief inspection. With all due respect, there's nothing in the record to say what Ms. Thompson was looking at as she looked out to get out to go get her eyewear. Further, as we pointed out in the brief, in terms of her and the record and the foundation for her testimony, she didn't remember whether there was even any snow on the ground. She didn't remember how she got there. She didn't, you know, things like that. So to stake her statement that she didn't see anything when she looked out the window, she didn't really remember anything, A, but B, more importantly, that doesn't matter because the test is simply whether it was visible. In Minnesota, the possessor of land has a duty of reasonable care for the entrance onto the premises, but that duty is not absolute. In other words, there is no duty to guard against open and obvious conditions on the premises. And if there's a lack of any proof on any of the four elements of a negligence cause of action, duty, breach, causation, and damages, then summary judgment is appropriate. Legal duty in circumstances like this, we would submit, is a question of law for Judge Dietrich to decide whether a legal duty was, in fact, owed. And the case law is pretty clear in Minnesota, and everybody's been through probably too many Minnesota winters, it seems like, that the slipperiness of ice is an obvious danger. You're held as an objective standard in Minnesota. Everybody understands that you step on some ice, you could slip, you could fall, you could get hurt. So it's a patch of ice, and in this record, we would is an obvious danger and a hazard, as Judge Dietrich noted, which she could have avoided with simple care. There was no reason why she couldn't have. It was a sunny day, it was clear, it was the weather was otherwise good. There was nothing at all to distract her. The W.T. Raleigh case, for example, that's where, the parking lot was a sheet of ice, and you know, the court concluded, well, yeah, but the salesman had to do his job, so he had to get to the building somehow, so he had to encounter the ice. None of those, and the court went through that and said there's absolutely no reason why. It was open. It was obvious based on the record before, and Judge Dietrich can only apply the record before her. And the record before her is that it was open and obvious and that there was nothing concealing it. The trial court also, we submit, properly used in terms of what started off the discussion in terms of does this testimony somehow lead to a reasonable inference. The trial court, we would submit, cited a case that is right on the money. That's the Bob Usseldinger case in terms of the standard. What that case, while it might not seem, it's not a Minnesota slip and fall case, but what it was an insurance coverage case where a partnership that was growing these seeds that were defective in that they caused ring rot to Minnesota potato farmers, and the potato farmers sued, trying to hook in as many policies as they could. One of the policies they were trying to hook in was the personal umbrella of one of the partners. And that policy did not list, it just lists the partner's personal land. It did not list the partnership's property where the potato seeds were developed. And so therefore the argument was, well, hold on a second here. This partner on his insured property back at his farm, there was a bit of testimony and evidence that he at times used the partnership truck for his own hauling of potatoes. And he actually hauled some potatoes himself that might very well have had ring rot in them. And he could have driven that to the subject premises. And so therefore it might have originated really at the partner's property, which would trigger coverage. And the Minnesota Supreme Court, I believe it was Judge Tom Janovich, but I'm not remembering that right now, said no, there's a little bit of deposition testimony in there, but it's got to be there's got to be some foundation to it. It can't be speculative, and it can't simply be, well, this might have happened, this could have happened. And it's, I have it right here very, very briefly. In opposing summary judgment, a party may not rely on general statements of fact, but must point to specific facts which create an issue for trial. Mere speculation without some concrete evidence is not enough to avoid summary judgment. Sometimes, of course, this evidence will be supplied by deposition testimony, but it must have some foundation other than mere conjecture. And that's what we would submit the trial court did in this case, was said, well, this is mere, cited that exact case and said, this is mere conjecture that she might have, all of this, the theory that's being espoused by the appellant here. That's mere conjecture. On this record, it was open and obvious based on the only people with any foundation, and therefore summary judgment was appropriate. Now, the undisputed record is also, and just to touch on that, this dusting, we would submit she did not, Ms. Schweigert did not say that there was a dusting of snow that covered the parking lot. The evidence, the only evidence that the trial court could credit was that it had been cleared. The only person that remembered, what she said was, she went out to clean the sidewalk, as was mentioned earlier. That was her purpose, was to clear a path by the sidewalk up to the store. How much snow did you clear? Well, I'm remembering a dusting. That is not a statement that a dusting covered the entire parking lot. Again, you would have, that's the undisputed record is that a dusting didn't cover the entire parking lot, that these ice patches, the ice patch in question, I should say, was open and obvious, and it was not concealed in any way. So based on that, we would respectfully submit that, a la the Usseldinger case, there's no specific evidence here, concrete evidence here, upon which the court could conclude that, yes, somehow this was concealed or hidden or wasn't in any way open and obvious, that anything to contradict the undisputed record. The reasonable anticipation, I touched on that. There's simply nothing to suggest that there's any reason to believe she, in this record, that she couldn't have just avoided it with due care. In other words, there were no distractions. Some of the cases, well, yeah, the window at that bar was sitting wide open and the patron fell through it, but you should, you know, you could maybe anticipate that because people are drinking, it's loud, it's noisy, things like that. Nothing like that here. This is a clear, sunny parking lot in Slayton, Minnesota, and there's no reason why the appellant in this case couldn't have simply stepped around the ice patch. As it relates to the amendment, it absolutely would have been futile based on the open and obvious doctrine that we have discussed, as well as the fact that this idea, assumed duty, the trial court correctly, in our view, said, well, the duty would have to exist beforehand, not after the fact. And you think about it, in Minnesota, for example, if I see somebody, if I know my neighbors are on vacation, I see someone slip and fall in their driveway, I'm going to go over and salt it. But did I have a duty beforehand then the person that slipped, then I would be, that would be an analogous fact pattern. Oh, now I'm going to sue him because he went over, and so he must have assumed a duty. As the trial court said, this it would have to exist beforehand, before the fact, the duty, number one. Number two, and just as importantly, that would be a subsequent remedial measure that would never come in to evidence that, and so your amendment would have to be, the submitted amendment in theory would have to be based on admissible evidence.
Counsel, so, with the limited time that you have left, could you answer the question of whether or not you think that the appeal, or the amendment of the complaint is properly before us? Do you agree with opposing counsel that all of the cases show that it deals with parties and he couldn't have been responsible for serving them with the notice of appeal?
I was unable to find anything that would suggest that a non-party needed to be served.
Okay.
with that. So we would agree that that issue is properly before the court. However, the trial court correctly decided it based on the doctrine of futility, as well as the theory that was offered would serve no useful purpose. In other words, there was no duty that existed on the part of Heartland before the incident. And with that, I will thank the court for its time.
Thank you. Thank you. Rebuttal argument, please.
Yes. First of all, the jig that was cited is circumstantial evidence. It has nothing to do with inferences. So I don't think that there's any, I've never seen a case anywhere that says that you have to reach the level of circumstantial evidence, as such as having the footprints in the snow, in order to say that inferences taken from facts can only be taken under those circumstances. Because otherwise you would basically be reading the take all the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party and the inferences out of the law.
But even with that standard, there's a level of reasonableness that's required, correct?
Absolutely. And that's what this comes down to. The respondent is saying that the inferences here are unreasonable. We're saying that the inferences here are reasonable. That's what this court has to determine. Respondent talked about foundation, that the only people with foundation are Jack
and Ms. Schweikert. Well, they don't have foundation because they didn't see it before she fell. Nobody saw it before she fell other than Ms. Thompson, who, despite her maybe not the best.
She didn't see it before she fell either.
Well, she didn't see it. Exactly.
No one saw it before she fell. It's in the negative.
She didn't see it indicating that the only testimony, let me put it this way. The only person who looked prior to the fall was her, and she said she didn't see it.
I have to take some exception to the way that you're characterizing the record, counsel, because Anna testified repeatedly, and I was just looking at her testimony again, that she doesn't remember what the condition of the property was, that she didn't know if there was anything hazardous on the property, which I think is a little bit different than what you're characterizing her testimony as, is I looked out at the land and saw nothing.
Okay.
That's a little bit different.
If I accept that, you still don't have a situation where, as respondent wants to argue, only Jack and Ms. Schweikert have the foundation to testify because they didn't see it before she fell.
I mean, and then we have the case law that says the open and obvious nature of a hazard is not dependent upon any person actually seeing the hazard before the hazard becomes a problem, right? I mean, you don't actually have to see it for it to be an open and obvious thing. Like, there could be a big, giant hole in the ground, and somebody could say, I didn't see the big, giant hole in the ground. Well, when you looked at it, you saw it.
Well, if you're not paying attention to something that's open and obvious. But here, our theory isn't that she wasn't paying attention. It's that it was covered by the dusting of snow. It's a simple issue. That's a different argument.
Right. I understand that.
Right. It all comes down to whether or not it's reasonable to infer from the evidence that it was covered by a dusting of snow. That's the answer, yes or no. I win or I lose. I can't argue with that. I'm just saying I should win because I believe it's a reasonable inference.
And I didn't see this in the record, so please fill in my information gaps. Is there something in the record that says what that dusting of snow was, or is it just described as a dusting? There's no, like, volume, there's no coverage, just dusting.
Just dusting, and even if you take the other inferences against me, there is no doubt that she is describing the area where Ms. Thompson fell. And we're not saying the whole parking lot was covered. I don't know. No one asked. Maybe that's my bad for in the deposition. But what I do know is I did ask about the area where she fell, and Ms. Schweikert said that's where the dusting was. That inference has to be taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. Real quickly, with regard to the assumption of the duty, I don't remember the subsequent remedial measure argument ever being made, and so I would say it was waived. And it puts me in a position here of having to go into issues with regard to whether it goes to notice and all that stuff. There's all kinds of arguments that could be made at trial, forgetting the fact that she came out and salted the area and shoveled the area after. I believe that would get in. But since it wasn't briefed, I'm not in a position to go into detail on that. And then with regard to assuming the duty, going out and shoveling your neighbor's walk after someone falls is not the same as having a business where you keep ice melt and a shovel in the corner to clear the area. That's an assumed duty, regardless of whether you breached it by not doing it before the fall or not. I mean, we're talking really breach there. I have this stuff. I know I should go out and do it. Oh, I didn't do that morning. She fell down. Now I'm going to go do it after. And then I'm going to argue I didn't assume the duty until she fell. No, you assumed the duty to do it. You just breached it by not doing it before she fell. My time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both attorneys for your briefing and argument this morning. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days. That concludes our oral arguments for this morning. The court will now retire to its deliberations.
Please,